Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's five-alarm fire time for America's traditional news media. Newspapers and network TV news are losing readers and viewers hand over fist. Advertisers are running to the internet. Newspaper profits are swooning. Big layoffs have hit major publishers' newsrooms. Nightly network news viewership has fallen almost in half in the last 25 years. Americans are flocking to internet news, but the internet in general doesn't have newsrooms and armies of reporters and editors and standards. So who's going to deliver the beef, the news? Up next on Point, old media men Jim Lehrer of NewsHour and Ben Bradley of The Washington Post on the new landscape of the news. Joining me now from Washington is Jim Lehrer. He's executive editor and anchor of PBS's NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. He's also the host of tonight's PBS special, Free Speech, Jim Lehrer with Ben Bradley, a conversation between two big figures in the news business. Jim Lehrer, thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom. Thank you.
Wonderful conversation you're having with Ben Bradley in this PBS special. I managed to catch it in advance over the weekend. It's a terrific conversation. And yet then I look around and I find myself in Ben's old newspaper, The Washington Post, today. Patricia Sullivan writing about all these threats to traditional media, all the hits that newspapers and network TV news are taking, and the huge questions about who's going to collect and provide the news in this new world we're headed into. What's your confidence level in the way things are headed, Jim?
Actually, my confidence level is very high for the very reasons that you have already outlined. The news still has to be reported, and the news has to be reported by professional journalists. While circulation of individual newspapers is down and viewership on the nightly news programs are down, their reach of these stories is larger than it's ever been before because of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
The websites of the newspapers and of the networks and all of that are doing very, very well. The problem is they just haven't figured out a way to make money doing it yet, but the basic reporting is still being done by the traditional news organizations. The bloggers don't do original reporting. A lot of these websites just pass on news and facilitate debate about the news. But in the beginning, there has to be a story. And those stories are still being done and always will be done by professional journalists. What is changing is the mechanics of how that reporting actually gets to individual readers, mm-hmm. and what used to be individual readers, individual viewers, listeners, or whatever. But the future for solid journalism is never been better, in my opinion, because the need for it has never been stronger.
You'll hear no argument from me on the need for solid reporting in the news. I mean, this show, like many things on the web, depends on reporting getting done, and that has to happen sort of where the rubber meets the road. But I think a lot of people are not so sure that the economics are going to work out here. The fear seems to be opening up that we could have a gap between a kind of decline in old media, and you've seen the layoff numbers just as well as I have, Jim, at big newspapers around the country, and this future when somehow, someday, the web starts to put reporters into the field. I mean, the Washington Post saying today, what is over is the era of the well-staffed single-medium newsroom with once-a-day or even once-an-hour deadlines, but that staff that's cranking out the news, that's doing the shoe-leather report. What's going to replace that?
Well, I think those people will be replaced and may be replaced by younger people. What the Post and some of these other news organizations are doing now is they're doing some early retirements and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. They're still going to be reporters. My point is that if those of us who care deeply professionally about reporting, and those out there who are our viewers and our readers and who are news consumers, the realization is, I see it everywhere, is while there are a lot of things happening that you can always give the negative here, there are negative things, there are some positive things as well. Because as the news outlets and the information outlets and the debate outlets proliferate, there is an increasing need for the basis of the basis of all of that. In other words, David Letterman tells a joke about the Dubai ports, and everybody laughs, but they're not going to laugh if they don't know about the Dubai ports. Where did they find out about the Dubai ports? Mm-hmm. They found out about it on a serious news program on television or radio, or they read about it, or through an internet, a serious news outlet on the internet. It could have come from anywhere. But the basic reporting has to continue and will continue, and I don't know of anybody who doesn't know that. But it's those of us who feel this strongly have to make the point and make the point to publishers and to television news executives and all of that. Remember, we are in the news business, and we must stay in the news business because that's where the need is. And I think financially, it'll become obvious. It isn't there right now, but I think it will become.
So you're saying, in fact, the new media may drive an appetite because they drive awareness. Cable television for a long time, and in more recent years, the internet collecting an audience that then will need the reporting. Of course, you've got to have the economics to have those reporters there and in harness and doing that work. I see the American Journalism Review's current cover story, Adapt or Die. There seems to be a question mark floating around that.
Well, I agree that we have to adapt. I think the only issue that I see, and I see that it's relevant to the NewsHour, our program, mm-hmm. as much as it is anybody else. It's possible a few years from now. The NewsHour is now it's an appointment television right. for those who don't have TiVo or
time
something
fixed.
Else.
Yep.
But yeah, absolutely. But that may change. I mean, it may be that people watch us all day, or watch us when they want to watch us, or they pick and choose. They may get it on. We're already available on iPods mm-hmm. and MP3s and all of that. You can watch certain segments. The issue for me is not the mechanics. It's not the technology. Mm. It's what is on that technology. What information is provided and disseminated on that technology, and that's the content business. That's the journalism business, and that's not going to change. The need is not going to change. Let's put it that way. And it could be that some of these independent internet news organizations will develop their own newsrooms and whatever, but the fact of the matter is they aren't that. Why should they? If the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Associated Press and all these other organizations are already set to collect the news, it seems a natural thing, and that's the evolution you're talking about, is matching the professional journalists with the revenue line mm. that will make it possible to support in an onward and growing way the collection and dissemination of the news. The mechanics of it are there, and they're growing and changing every day, but the journalism part must remain the same.
The need is there. The challenge, how to ensure that happens in a time when the sort of economic structure of all this is more uncertain.
Absolutely.
Jim Lehrer, what about the audiences that you feel out there now? You speak to every night on NewsHour with Jim Lehrer on PBS. Do you sense the American audience for news changing under the influence of new media? New media very often means bloggers. I mean, that's a huge part of it. Opinion and sort of the processing through opinion of the news, a huge part of that new media. Does that change the way people's appetite, what they want in the news?
Well, I haven't seen that as much on the NewsHour. The one of the things is people are used to dealing in opinions now with the blogs, and the internet makes it easier to send your opinion off. It's easier to sit and send off an email, and so the heat of our email is intensified. Mm-hmm. People are nastier. In other words, they're less interested in dialogue than they are in expressing their opinions, and it's easier to do because of the technology. That's fine.
Just bang it out and hit send. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. And that's a lot easier than having to write out a letter and put a stamp on and take it to the mailbox or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that slows the thought down. In this case, it's instant. And I think that's terrific. I mean, I have no problems with any of this. I think the more the merrier, the more outlets, the more ways people can communicate and express themselves is terrific. But as I say, in the beginning there has to be a story. For instance, all the major stories that we're talking about now that the bloggers are on mm-hmm. or the cable news out there. For instance, Haditha. We know about that because of some old-fashioned reporting from Time magazine.
Right.
The NSA surveillance story, we know about that because of some old-fashioned reporting from the Washington Post. Randy Cunningham story was broken and facilitated by some reporter for the Copley News Service and the San Diego newspaper. Abramoff case, Washington Post again. The basis for a lot of these things that people are talking about and debating, and which is terrific, still have a beginning with some serious news. And those of us who care about this, maybe there has to be more partners, maybe in terms of adapting, the adapt or die kind of thing. Maybe there have to be more coalitions between print and cable television or
digital.
Blogs or, or whatever, digital, you name it. There may be new ways to facilitate it, but there has to be the continued reporting.
And with that need, you're confident that one way or another that reporting will be there, that we don't just float off into an opinion sphere.
That's never going to happen.
Bill's calling from Northborough, Massachusetts. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing?
We're good. What do you think, Bill?
You started off the hour by asking rhetorically, how is the old media working for us?
Yes.
And for me, it's working quite well. I mean, the New York Times, the Boston Globe, Time and Newsweek. I mean, I actually get hardcore information. I do get opinion, by the way, but lots of times I'll get opinion based upon fact, which is not something that you're going to get very often by the bloggers. I don't see depth from what I've been exposed with the bloggers. I don't see well-informed opinion. What I do see is an awful lot of lazy thinking, and that's the part I find most discouraging.
Bill, what do you make of the falling circulation numbers at the hard news outlets that you described there?
It's very discouraging. It truly is discouraging when you realize that something like American Idol gets more in the way of interest than what happens in the previous day's news. As a citizen, I find that to be threatening. I'm very discouraged by this whole approach that citizens seem to have. Please tell me what to think because I'm incapable of thinking for myself.
So you say bring it on old media style. You like the newspapers and you want them big and strong, but we see what's happening with that circulation, and it's a little bit of a conundrum here. Jim Lehrer of PBS's NewsHour is with us, also right now from Washington, Ben Bradley. He's currently vice president at large at the Washington Post, retired in 1991 after 23 years as executive editor, storied years at the Washington Post. Ben Bradley, thanks very much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
We know you're talking with Jim Lehrer on PBS tonight. We want to tap into some of that thinking right now. Ben, what do you make of what's going on? Your old paper, The Washington Post, all kinds of stories today from Patricia Sullivan, Jay Rosen, people saying, hey, the old way is melting down and we haven't figured out how to make sure that the news is there the new way yet. What's going on here? Are Americans going to get the news they need as we shift into new media?
Well, I certainly feel that they will, and in a great many cases, the one case I know something about, I think they are getting the news. I think if there are fewer newspapers, that is a fact, and I don't know what the right number is, but I don't see any why civilization is a whole lot better with 13 daily newspapers in New York than four. But
you've seen the circulation numbers. You know what that looks like at papers across the country. Are you saying there are too many papers out there that we need to pull the side through?
No, I'm not. But so the Washington Post circulation has been declining for a while. Actually, for the last 6 months, it's been steady.
Yeah.
But the internet, the WashingtonPost.com, for instance, is increased enormously. It has become financially very viable, and that is serving customers that used to get their news from the newspaper. But what's the difference? If the newspaper provides the internet with the information, it's still the news and the newspaper. I don't think they get it as in the dose they require, but that's, that'll happen.
Adapt or Die, the headline in the American Journalism Review cover story this week, and we've seen layoffs in a lot of big newsrooms. I'm looking here at a story, Ben Bradley, I guess the Times picked this up from the Columbia Journalism Review over the weekend. Time, as in Time, Inc., paying $4 million for the photographs of what Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. At the same time, they're letting go Donald Bartlett and James Steele, saying they can't afford these guys.
Well, all you got to do is just tell that story, and the answer is right there staring you in the face. What, I mean, that's ridiculous.
But Bartlett and Steele are out of a job, and Bradgelina's baby's photos are in the magazine.
Yeah, but I bet you they don't stay out of a job. They won't stay out of a job. I just don't think that. And I think that we don't want to waste all our time moaning about how tough it is in journalism. The papers, this paper is making about the same amount of money it combined in its dot-com business and its newspaper business. I consider it the same business. The dot-com uses the raw material, the same raw material that the newspaper uses.
So keep pushing it. Jim, I hear you there.
Tom, I was just going to hi, Ben, this is Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, and I was just going to say, what Ben is saying is just fleshing out exactly what I was saying earlier, Tom. Mm-hmm. The reach of the average story in the Washington Post, just to use the Washington Post as an example, is 2 and 3 times what it used to be.
Yes.
Because it is on the dot-com, and because the bloggers pick up the stories and run with them and whatever. The circulation, the physical circulation of the newspaper itself may be down, but the reach and the pull and the influence of individual stories in the Washington Post has never been higher.
So bring it on, say Ben Bradley and Jim Lehrer. But the numbers here look discouraging to any number of people on the circulation front, on the evening network news viewership, down and down. There's a new mix emerging here. We've got a lot of listeners who want to join this conversation. Stacy's calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Stacy. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, the one thing I wanted to mention is I think the challenge to old media is that they don't get to decide what the front page story is going to be. They can bury a story on page 6, but if new media, if the bloggers, if the people out there on the internet pick it up and think that it's really worth focusing on, they're going to start chattering, and the editors of the old media newspapers are going to have to respond to that. And so I think new media is very it's democratizing what the content's going to be. And that's a challenge to people who grew up in old, you know, came up in old media over the last 40 years. You know, they're not used to being told what they're going to cover.
And suddenly the people, through blogging and all the rest, are having a big voice in that. Jim Lehrer, Dan Rather found that out in a hurry when the blogs went after him on the Bush National Guard story.
Sure. I agree with her 100%, and I don't see anything wrong with that. The fact of the matter is, they have to get the story first from page 6, and they react to it, and then people pick up on it. I have no problems with that. I think that's terrific. I agree with her.
Ben Bradley, what about the role of the editor here? There's a lot of talk about how, you know, news was a kind of top-down business, and now it's a conversation with the viewer or the reader. Is that a good thing for people in the editor's chair?
I'm not sure. That rings a big bell to me. The editor is the only thing he's got to do is find a good owner and then hire a lot of good people, and then he's done. I think that when you start a day, when the day in Washington starts, and you know nobody's awake, and then they get up and they start reading the news. Well, the only news they get first is from the paper. It really is, to maybe two papers. Television is getting its news as the day begins from the paper. Radio, all news radio used to be a joke. We used to say, when all news radio first started in Washington, the first reporter came to work at 10 o'clock, but they were on the air at 6:30. And you could almost hear the paper, the pages of the paper change, you know, turn over as they read it. And, you know, that's an exaggeration of what happens. But the news day starts with the paper.
Greg's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I just want to make a quick comment agreeing with what Ben just said.
Yeah.
I'm a reporter at a small-town daily newspaper. Our population is increasing, and our circulation is increasing with it. And I found that the newspaper is really the only avenue that local residents have to get local news. If a train accident happens, if there's a car accident, a particularly fatal car accident, the newspaper is the only place to get that info.
Absolutely.
So you're the go-to institution in your town, and how's that working financially, Greg? Is the paper healthy?
We're doing well. Circulation's going up.
We're glad to hear it, and we hope you keep right on doing that. I want to turn right now to New York. Jeff Jarvis joins us. He's a blogger and media critic. His blog is at buzzmachine.com. Jeff Jarvis, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
So here we've got two big icons from traditional media, Ben Bradley, Jim Lehrer. They say the news is going to be there because the news has to be there. Everything depends. People depend on it. The blogosphere depends on it. So we're going to be fine, thank you, despite some circulation cutbacks, some layoffs. We're going to be fine. How do you see it, Jeff?
Well, I'm delighted to hear these eminent icons of American journalism embrace the future. Not too long ago, a lot of editors and publishers in the U.S., I think, feared it, but I think they're both absolutely right. And in fact, there's tremendous opportunity here. The truth is that news is not shrinking, although some newspapers may be. The truth is that news is exploding. There are tons of new ways to gather and distribute news and get news from sources all around the world.
But that's two different uses of the word news. I'm looking here at viewership for TV news. It's down and down and down for 25 years. Newspapers, you see nothing but bloody headlines recently. I mean, the South Carolina Caller reporter, notwithstanding, you've got layoffs and circulation declines.
That's the big old news institutions. If you add in their .coms, if you add in the blogosphere, which doesn't just comment on news, it also does sometimes report. In any case, it helps distribute news. The interest in news, the consumption of news is huge. My 14-year-old son reads Dig.com and contributes to it and feels like he owns it. I think there's a whole different relationship that journalism can and should have with the public. And it's not just about being gatekeepers and selecting things. It's also about realizing that the public knows things that we don't know, and we've got to find new ways to help them share that. There are all kinds of new experiments going on around the country trying to get local people to help us report the news that we can't afford to report ourselves.
Jeff Jarvis, describe Dig.com for our listeners and for Jim and Ben Bradley. It's really interesting what that does here. I wonder what editor Bradley thinks about it. Dig.com, how's it work?
Dig is a site where the readers promote and nominate all the stories they find interesting, and then the readers themselves vote on the ones that should go on the front page.
So stories from any source.
Any source at all. Now, it's fairly geeky stuff now, but others are trying the same thing. My son, who am webmaster at jakejarvis.com, showed this to the faculty at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, where I'm going to teach. And journalism professors got nervous and said, well, what happens if a bad story makes it to the front page? My son calmly showed them, well, I go here, I pull this down, and you see that link where it says, this is lame? I click on that.
This
is everybody else, he says, because we don't want it there. It's ours. And that was a big moment for me. I realized that the audience can again feel an ownership of news. And if we can make that happen, it's a very powerful thing.
Ben Bradley, longtime editor-in-chief, how about that? If your readers are the bottom-line deciders of what goes on a page one, even if it's a digital page one, how do you feel about that?
Well, they don't decide.
Here they do. At this website, they're taking articles from all over the place. They're deciding what makes it page one. They can kind of take something from the Post, something from the South Carolina paper, make their own online.
Well, they can do that because it's a free world. But it's not the newspaper that they're making. They're making some use of it that is different, and more power to them.
Jim
the price Lair- is right, isn't it? I mean, all they do is steal it.
Yeah.
Well, the price is right.
They're not stealing it. They are linking to it, and they are giving you promotion and a new audience, and that's a beautiful thing for our business.
I don't hear a whole lot of credit for it, but that's all right.
Jim, what do you think if the readers or viewers start sort of putting together the agenda here?
I'm with Ben, and I'm really with Jeff Jarvis on this. I just think this is terrific, and I would use the same word he's using, which is there is an explosion of news, there's an explosion of interest, and it's a good thing. Whether people are doing Dig.com or call whatever it is, they're doing it with the news. They're doing it because they care about various events. They care about their democratic society. They care about the war. They care about this and that and the other thing. I think that is terrific. And there's going to be a place for everybody who cares about that, whether they're working for newspapers or television networks or bloggers or Dig.com or whatever. It's a terrific thing that's going on, and nobody is getting hurt by this, with the exception of some people in the old media, but they are adapting. I agree with Jeff Jarvis. They are adapting. Some of them are slower than others, but everybody's getting with it because they have no choice.
Well, the poker is at the back. Adapt or die, says the American Journalism Review. Derek's calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Derek. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much for the show. Sure. As always, NPR is really, I think, the star of news media.
Well, you're kind. What do you think today, Derek?
There are a couple of things. First of all, I have to say that I've been so disappointed with the photographic coverage in the Times and the Washington Post of the Iraq War. You know, we can see graphic pictures of people being blown up in Israel and Palestine and Katrina and so forth. I have yet to see any of the graphic pictures of what's going on in Iraq, particularly with the civilians and our troops.
Would you extend that to television coverage as well, Derek, or not?
Yeah, I would. You know, I was recently, I am American, I've been here for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I recently saw some coverage in London, the BBC. It was mind-boggling. You know, you had people on the ground, it was very much like Vietnam, tank rolling along with soldiers on either side, they hit a roadside bomb. I don't think the American people, by and large, have much of a clue of what it actually is like on the ground.
Do you see self-censorship in that or something else, Derek?
Well, again, coming from South Africa, where I grew up with censorship of just about everything, the Rand Daily Mail, a very progressive newspaper,
yep,
routinely had their offices raided by the equivalent of the FBI and the editors intimidated. It scares me when I feel that that's the kind of thing that's happening here.
Let's put it to our panel. Ben Bradley, do you feel the American press self-censoring on its portrayal of the Iraq War? Visually in particular, Derek asks.
Well, I got to tell you, I haven't spent 5 minutes thinking about that. I think that I don't know where the self-censorship is coming from. I mean, I don't see why it's in anybody's interest at the Washington Post to censor it. What are they censoring?
Well, Derek is saying he's not seeing the sort of full visual bloody of how it is out there.
Well, I mean, Derek, how many papers do you read a day, and how many television news do you watch? I think that, you know, I doubt that you read both the Times and the Post with that kind of thoroughness, but maybe you do.
Of course, it can happen. The Washington Post came out after the beginning of the war and said we weren't tough enough on the WMD issue.
But, yeah, but that's a different issue,
Thomas. You're talking about the editorial page now.
Yeah. Jim Lehrer, how about on the TV side?
I don't know what Derek's talking about. It certainly doesn't apply to us. Seldom an evening goes by that we don't run some really bloody footage from Iraq showing dead people.
Yeah.
So no soft sell in your corner.
No.
Dan is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to thank Mr. Lehrer for the show. I've watched it from ever since I've moved to Nashville for 20 years.
And, terrific. Thank you.
And I wanted to say that because Nashville's kind of conservative, there's a little bit of censorship in that it's just very conservative what comes out in the Gannett newspaper we have here. So what I do, and these are the two points I wanted to make.
Okay.
As far as the network evening news stuff, I think over the years it's the demographic of the advertisers kind of shapes what gets on those major stories. So I've kind of lost interest in that. And then I used to subscribe to the Sunday New York Times, but because it's, I guess they're trying to make up circulation by becoming more of a lifestyle thing tailored to the regions across the country. So now I rely on internet compilation services like Truthout and Costs and all these, where you can go to a page, there's like 50 articles on there from every source.
Mm-hmm.
You can skip back and forth and look at stuff, and in 10 minutes I get what I used to get by reading the front page of the newspaper.
Dan, do you worry about what that kind of reading does to the economic viability of the papers who have supplied that news, or that's not your problem?
What I am worried about is what I've heard about the major internet people are trying to find a way to get income and slow down the flow of information that someone isn't getting paid for. So I think that's only temporary, this free kind of way this goes about now. But you're
migrating a little bit there, and it's an interesting migration. Ben Bradley, here's another reader who now gets his news from a compilation, a web service that pulls stories from all over the place. I don't know how the Washington Post gets compensated for that. Are you worried about it?
Yes, we all worry about it. The next great fortune at the Washington Post is going to be made by the guy who figures out how to charge these people who use it for free.
Jeff Jarvis?
Tom, can I?
Yes, please.
Let me break in here.
Yeah.
I actually have to disagree there. I think that charging the consumer is not the only way to make money. It's obviously advertising is what supports media apart from PBS. And so what happens is all these new sources start to send traffic to the Washington Post and to other sources, and if Washington Post is smart, they have ads on those pages, they make money that way. That's what's happening now. The margins are not the same as they were in a monopoly business. But the issue there is really not advertising next to the news. It's the loss of classified to different functionality online.
But what about that, Jeff? Those margins are getting much smaller. Newspapers made huge profits for a long time. They're still strong, but they're so much smaller that Wall Street doesn't like it. Will this new economic structure support the shoes on the ground, the reporters in Iraq and all over Washington and Nashville and every town? Do the economics support the shoe leather reporting that Jim Lehrer praises?
If we prioritize ourselves correctly, yes, I believe it does. But we have to get rid of the commodity junk that we do in too many news organizations. We send 15,000 journalists to the political conventions where nothing happens. And whatever does happen, you can watch on C-SPAN. Newspapers have to decide, with the exception of the Post and the Times, that they're essentially local, and they have to report that better. Instead, we send, you know, the 100th golf columnist off to a golf tournament, which is really not necessary. We have our own movie critics when the movies aren't different anywhere else. I think newspapers have to decide what makes them uniquely valuable in their communities.
Jim Laird, do you think the big institutions of media are ready to do that?
I think Jeff Jarvis has got it absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the adaption that people who want to remain in the serious news business and want to be read and want to be quoted and want to be viable and relevant, they have to make those kinds of hard decisions. I agree with everything you said.
Let's get a caller here. David's calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm surprised, it often happens, to be echoing the opinion of the previous caller. I'm worried about enough competition in the media, and yes, the Internet is encouraging for that if net neutrality can be preserved so that we get good delivery, and the newspapers will be able to adapt to good advertising with online delivery.
But David, there seems to be all kinds of competition these days. Why are you worried about that?
A lot of competition, yes, among fewer and fewer media, fewer and fewer newspapers.
Well, the numbers on it is important as the facts are. The newspaper today, let's take the New York Times because it isn't the Post. Mm. The New York Times today is so much better than the New York Times of 50 years ago that it's a joke. It's a joke. They're doing more. They're more ambitious. They're more skillful. The reporters are better. They're wider. They're drawing from a wider pool of Americans. And let's not forget that.
Ben Bradley, you must have heard the criticism. People say, well, the corporate ownership of American media has become too concentrated and therefore not as healthy, not as diverse. How do you respond to that?
Well, I suppose that it would be I couldn't imagine it could be better if a chain only owned 60 papers instead of 90. But I'll be damned if I see how. Necessarily, it's true. I just don't think that is true. I think I don't think the Post is any worse off for owning a paper in the state of Everett, Washington, than if it didn't. I don't think it's a hell of a lot better, but I don't think it's very different.
As long as the principles are right.
As long as the ownership is committed to quality, that's where it's that's what you need.
Also, Jim Lehrer.
Yes.
I would also add Jeff Jarvis's point that this is where the new media, the bloggers, and all of that really keep people's feet to the fire. That's a new element. Instead of having five newspapers, you have one newspaper, but you got thousands of people who are reacting to that one newspaper or to those two or three networks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's a new blend. But it's a new way of holding my feet to the fire and everybody else's feet to the fire who's in the practice of journalism. And we're still figuring all that out. But I think it's terrific. I think the fear about corporate ownership and competition is also being eliminated by this new media. I may be wrong. But we're still figuring it out. But I think it's an element. I'd be interested to see what Jeff thinks about it. But I think it's an element, at least, to mitigate the fear.
Brother. Preach it, brother. Yes, absolutely. But I think there are new opportunities here. We have to go to the next step. We can read news from all around the world now. Mm-hmm. We can have the bloggers and keep our feet to the fire. The next step, I think, is to find the ways that the audience can start to report and commit acts of journalism. It happens now when God help us, a disaster happens and someone has their phone there and they capture that moment.
With the tsunami, we saw lots of amateurs offering their video up to the TV news networks, that's for sure.
Even in Iraq, after we quote-unquote won or ended the war, a lot of bloggers there started blogging. One of them was a 24-year-old dentist who started writing wonderful stuff. He's written now for the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the mm-hmm, Guardian. Mm-hmm. He's coming over here this fall to study journalism. That's what this world enables. Is I think if we become educators about journalism and help the people learn how to commit good acts of journalism, then journalism will only grow.
Commit good acts of journalism, listeners, readers. AJ is calling from Potsdam, New York. Hi, AJ. You're on the air.
Good day, gentlemen. Mr. Lehr, a pleasure to be able to speak to you and Mr. Bradley on the air. I think one of the things that I find disappointing in how broadcast journalism, in particular television, has evolved over the last 20 years or so, particularly in the commercial venue, is it's become more infotainment rather than strict news reporting, presenting the facts and information. The news divisions have become subsumed by the entertainment divisions. We have, for want of a better term, pretty young faces that are there to be cute and entertain. I'm not interested in that. I live near the Canadian border. I can get the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation off air. They have an hour news program every night of the week called The National. It's strictly news. The person that does the reading, a gentleman by the name of Peter Mansbridge, usually, is not an anchor. He's a newsreader, which is what the BBC does and other European broadcasters.
So Americans have gone the other way, but they've seen their viewership drop and drop. Jim Lehr, that hasn't been the PBS formula, but it hasn't worked for the network news either.
No, it hasn't worked for the network news, and I think they're finally going to get it. And I think the pendulum, or I hope they're going to get it. I think their survival depends on it, that the pendulum must get back into the news business. I would tell people all the time, you want to be entertained, don't watch the news hour, go to the circus. I'm not in the entertainment business. There are many, many more people who are better entertainers than I am. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these folks who move their news. We've got to make people laugh. We got to make people cry. We got to make, that is a purpose. That's not the purpose of news. The purpose of news is to give them information. They may laugh and cry as a result of that, but if you start putting elements like emotional elements into mm-hmm. your purposes, then you're going down a road and you're going to get whopped because movies can do it a lot better than we can.
But Jim, for that, and of course you've got many loyal viewers because of that, but at the same time, the PBS NewsHour has smaller viewership than the commercial network news. What does that tell you? Is it a specialty broadcast in its sobriety?
Well, we have 2.5-3 million people watch us every night. That's more than that are on watching all cable when we're on the air put together.
And a poke in the eye with a sharp stick in the gym.
Yeah, right. And, I mean, we got also, when we lament the demise of the nightly news programs, or 30, I don't know what the number is now. Jeff probably knows better than I, of the commercial network news programs. I think it's, 15-20 million are watching them every night. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's still a sizable audience. But those folks, in my opinion, they need to go back and just give the news. And I think if they do that, I think they will. I don't know if their audience will grow, but at least it'll stop diminishing, and it'll also reestablish what their real purpose is.
Ben Bradley, let me ask you about resources in the newspaper business, because we've seen these falling profit levels, and of course the question is, will the news resources continue to be put to the news stories that are out there? Do you have any doubt about that? There seem to be newspaper people really concerned these days about whether their resources are going to be there to do the traditional news gathering job. Do you have any doubt?
Well, I mean, I'm the wrong person to ask. I've only worked for one company, newspaper, daily newspaper in my life, and that company is committed to spending the money. The news budget of the Washington Post, when I got to it in 1965, was probably $4 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably 120 now, and it is crazy to think that the resources aren't being, as far as I'm concerned, aren't being devoted to it. Now maybe the Gannett newspaper it has some economies of scale because they own 90 papers. I don't know. I'm a Greek major. I don't know about finance.
Right.
But you can't tell me that there aren't some pretty damn good newspapers in that crowd. Pretty damn good, I said. I didn't say excellent.
Yeah. Jeff Jarvis, though, I'm reading today in Ben Bradley's paper, The Washington Post, Patricia Sullivan here saying, what worries professional journalists above all else is whether what replaces the newsroom of today will support the journalism of tomorrow.
Tom, I worry about that too, but I think we start that from the wrong end. In what industry can you start the talking with, well, here's the budget I want, now go get it for me? I think we have to recognize that like airlines, like every other industry, news is changing. And I think that it's changing for the better if we embrace that and find the ways to make it work. If we try to, we have to get over saying we have to maintain the newspapers and the newsrooms as they were, and we have to reinvent them in good new ways. And we're going to give up some things. We're going to give up movie critics, maybe. But maybe we're going to get better local reporting with more sources of people telling us what's happening in the world. And so, yeah, there's an economic problem here. We've got to recognize that. We've got to have some guts to have some experimentation going on, which I see happening in London and in Europe and not in America, frankly, as much. But we can't start with the bottom line. We've got to end up with the bottom line.
Jim Lehrer, I want to ask you, I'm looking here at a column from the NPR ombudsman, Jeffrey Dworkin. He's saying they're getting email from listeners these days saying it's too traditionally balanced. They want truth with edge, to quote from one listener, truth with edge. So get out there, be more skeptical, put some edge on the truth you deliver. What do you think of that, Jim?
I think that's nonsense from my point of view. That's not the business I'm in. As I said to somebody the other day, we will supply the facts, you supply the edge and the outrage. I'm not in that. I think there should be edge. I think there should be outrage. I think there should be strong opinions. I think there should be shouting, but that's not my part of the business.
Ben Bradley, edge, how about it?
Well, there's a lot of edge in there. There's no edge in sports.
Oh, there's plenty.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no edge in local news. Of course there is. There's no edge in crime reporting. There's no edge in foreign news. There's edge all over the place. You're a big newspaper is putting down 150,000 words a day, changing it often during the 24 hours, and there is a big smorgasbord out there.
Jeff Jarvis, how about this edge issue? Do news consumers, I guess, who are raised up in the internet sort of blog-tainted world, are they going to demand news that's got more sort of opinion woven through it, or are they going to want to continue to see those in two different bottles?
I'll turn that around. I think that we've had a myth in American journalism since I went to journalism school that we were objective. There's no such thing as objectivity. We're all human. We all have opinions. One thing I've learned from this online world is that the highest virtue of this is not objectivity, it's transparency. It's telling the readers or our audience what they need to know so they can judge us along with what we say, and I think that's only fair to do.
But that's a real change from the traditional ethic here. Does that make its way eventually into all news?
I hope it does, but there's plenty of precedent for it. You go to London and you see The Guardian, for whom I write, is a liberal newspaper, and The Telegraph is a conservative newspaper. But then you get past that and say, judge us on the quality of the reporting that we do.
Ben Bradley, how about it? You're going to see the European-style, British-style opinion in American news columns?
Wait a minute. I mean, I don't think that British papers are a hell of a lot better than ours, the best of the British papers. And
more opinion in their columns, though.
What?
More opinion in their news stories.
Oh, I don't know. I really don't. I mean, I don't read as much as the rest of you guys apparently read, but I read quite a lot of it, and I travel quite a lot.
Yeah.
And it isn't the opinion thing. It's the fairness thing that worries me. I mean, if you're going to describe a fire, you can't describe it without some opinion in it. And we're not even wasting time with that.
Keep it fair.
Keep it fair.
That's the word.
Keep it straight up.
The word is fairness. The word is fairness, not objectivity, in my opinion.
And keep that news coming. Jim Lehrer and Ben Bradley, we look forward to your conversation on PBS tonight. Thanks for joining us. Jeff Jarvis, always good to have you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.